Alan Jeremini, we are sitting here on the patio, the terrace of the Absolute Monastery, and you have the tenacity, the veracity, and the to ask the question, how can you tell a stem cell from another cell? And Ellen, what answer did I give you?
You look for the stem cells, and period. You just focus on seeing it.
Thank you. Ellen Jeremini has just given the greatest scientific breakthrough of the ages. When you are one-pointed, you accomplish what goal you have in mind. And so if you are looking to find a stem cell in the body, then look to find a stem cell. But first you have to know how to define a stem cell. Heinz, how do you define a stem cell?
You tune into your understanding about the science of your body and reveal the thought of what you're looking for.
That's a rather round the barn trip. A stem cell is an undifferentiated cell which is available in everything. Everything has stem cells. And the stem cells are before they are differentiated, before they have decided what role they're going to play in existence. Now, we're learning right now that the brain has 10,000 stem cells born new every day. How they know that, I cannot imagine. Except that our scientists are some of the greatest fantasy people in the world. And that's great. That's great. I mean, I'm not going to deny it. I think it's a great idea. Okay, now. So we have these 10,000 stem cells. Why aren't they differentiated? When do they get differentiated? Why is it that these 10,000 were not differentiated? Are they in one mass not differentiated? Or do they pop out of every little nook and cranny of our brain as these 10,000 new cells are born, and they're born in the back and the front and the side and the top and the middle and the bottom, all around the brain? And I kind of think that's more like what happens, really, because I don't think it's just a big army of 10,000 brain stem cells marching at the front of your brain. It's a nice idea, because it gives them power, you know, but you have to think of, and this is as far as power goes, you have to think of a stem cell like a drop of ink. Stem cell is just a little drop of ink, and it can do nothing. It can dry up. It can be nothing. It can be undifferentiated eternally, so to speak. Or the stem cell can be anything. It can be anything it is associated with. It can be anything that it is made aware of. It is put to work as being. Okay, now, Ellen asked the question, how do we get a hold of these 10,000, not 10,000, just one? How do we get a hold of these stem cells? Undifferentiated cells. Well, scientists know in embryos and placentas their stem cell exists, and they have found them in abundance, and it's a natural source, an easy source for them to use, because they don't have to worry about the stem cells, because they're already stem cells and they have not yet been defined as to where they're going. But government and people, thinking that people might misuse that awareness, have said you can't take those stem cells and use them in scientific research. So scientists said, okay, you take away one toy, I'll go find another. And so the scientists started researching throughout the body and finding where stem cells might be in other places of the body. And lo and behold, they're finding them everywhere. I rather believe that every cell of our body gives birth to a new stem cell every day. And the cell of our body is a substantial cell, if you might call it that. It's a daddy or a mommy. And the baby cell is a baby, just a little infant waiting to be directed in life. And we could use that simile because it fits very well there. Metaphors are hard to come by in any event. But just imagine that. So every cell of our body is producing a stem cell waiting to be creative and be imaginative and be exciting. But the parent stem cell is so overwhelming that their way of life, their way of being, their, and the parent of the stem cell, not the parent stem cell, but the parent of the stem cell, is so conditioned to their way of life that this is what they put into the consciousness of the baby stem cell. And you say, well, that sounds so easy and so logical and so wonderful. Why don't we just start putting the proper things in our stem cell's consciousness to bring about a being who is wonderful? Well, we do, we are, and we can, and we will. But we don't always do it. Sometimes we say something negative to our stem cells, and our stem cells say, okay, you know. Tomorrow, the new stem cells come along, and they say, hey, what you guys doing? Well, we're playing basketball, but the thing is, you got to throw the hoop through the ball, you know. No, no, you put the ball through the hoop. Well, no, in this game here, we throw the hoop through the ball, and we keep getting hit on the head with it and all that kind of stuff all the time. It does not seem to be too practical, but it's the way we're learning to do it, you know. Well, why don't you change the rules? Why don't you put a new program in motion? Well, you got a suggestion? Yeah, well, why don't you throw the ball through the hoop and hook the hoop on someplace where you don't have to be concerned about it? Hey, that's a new idea. Okay, let's do that. So they screw the hoop onto the wall or whatever, and then they throw the basketball at the hoop. Hey, this is fun. It doesn't hurt so much. And you see, who knows how these new thoughts come about, how these new ideas are born, how these new conditions take place. Because if the mother and father, having been raised as they are and conditioned as they are to life, and as they put this into their own children's experience because they think it was good enough for me, good enough. This is an interesting statement. There's a statement in the Bible, not the Bible, but the statement that Christians use. If it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me. Have you ever heard that?
Mm-hmm.
If it's good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me. And that is absolute 100% garbage. Because the Master himself said, whatever things I do, you can do also, and greater things than what I've done, you will do. So, if we're going to say it was good enough for Jesus, good enough for us, nothing was good enough for Jesus. He was always out, you know, romping in new territory. He was always out having new experiences. And, I mean, what kind of a jerk would go out with a bunch of guys fishing in a fishing boat who got frightened at a storm at sea? I mean, these guys are supposed to be fishermen. They're supposed to have been out in the boat oftentimes in rough weather and stuff like that, really tough. And they don't get frightened. But the story was good. And what's the old boy doing? What's Jesus doing? I mean, he's a real klutz. He's laying in the boat sleeping, undisturbed by the waves and by the anxiety of his friends. And they said to him, Jesus, help us. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Did they know that he was going to say peace and calm the waves? Or what did they know? But you see, the thing is, we limit ourselves to our own limitations. We make a human being out of Jesus. And he's a divine being. We make human beings out of ourselves, and we're divine. We make human beings out of our stem cells. And so our stem cells produce nothing more than more human beings. Now, Ellen sent me, or read me, an email that I received from, where is it, London?
Austria.
And they're going to have an experiment. Is it in Austria?
America.
They're going to have an experiment in America. And so this experiment is going to...
They are taking 60 voluntary patients who have had in the last, I think last month, heart attack, and they operate them. 30 of them will have the operation with putting new stem cells in their heart, and the other 30, they have just a normal operation. The doctors don't know who the 60 people are, which one are those with the new stem cells and which they don't have. And then after 6 months, they check the results.
To be. This is the program to be. You see, in China, they're doing stem cell infusion into people, quite a bit, in fact, because their laws are a little different than the United States. And they're putting a couple thousand stem cells into this one little boy's brain to help him to overcome certain problems. Well, now, really, you see, that's where a little bit of medicine is good, a lot is better, and it's not really true. It's a little bit of faith in the concept is not as good as a lot of faith in the concept, so you take a lot of stem cells. Now, what does the stem cell do? Now, this is very, very important for us to consider. What is the role of the stem cell? The role of the stem cell is the role of the genie. The role of the stem cell is the role of the genie. The role of the stem cell is to do what it is bid to do. Whatever it's bidden to do, the stem cell does this. We don't understand how that works. One day we may and one day we may not. But that's what its purpose is. Now, what is it the doctors should be telling the stem cell to do that they're putting in the place of the heart that is had a heart attack? What is it that they're doing? What is it that they're going to do? Are they going to say, okay, stem cell, you go right into that heart and you just recondition that heart so it's a brand new 20 karat heart, or a beautiful, fantastic, valuable, perfect, super wonderful heart, or a liver problem, or any other problem, brain problem, and just put a cell in there and say, cell, go to work. Now that cell, this is an interesting thing. The stem cell has about it a shell, you might say, that is not in force. The moment the stem cell is told or put in motion to do something, then it develops this cell shell around itself. So it cannot be changed. It cannot be mutilated. It cannot be in any way disturbed. And so when this stem cell, which now is motivated, goes into work, it does its job regardless of its friends, other cells around it, doing their unhappy work. And it is like a it's a catalyst. That's a good word for it. It's a catalyst. It goes in and it contributes to the change of what is wanted of the liver, for instance, to purify the liver. And it contributes to that change of the purification of the liver by giving it this beautiful mirror example of itself. And so then the liver just purifies. Now, how long does it take one little cell to do the work upon, let's say, a trillion cells?
Instant.
No.
Now, it's
instant. Why do you say instantly?
Because all time is now.
Why?
So it is the only time.
Why do you say that? What has that got to do with one little cell affecting a trillion other cells? Come on now.
It's just only
all
one time.
Time is now.
Now.
And all?
Space is here and now.
Yes. Time and space are
here and now.
And therefore, any activity of a stem cell is an instantaneous activity for whatever its purpose is to be. Why do people stub their toe all the time? Why do people create about themselves bad marriages? Why do people create themselves with poor bodies or good bodies or poor minds or good minds? Why is it some family just generates geniuses? Because that's what they're surrounded by, geniuses. And other families create themselves with people who have no interest in learning at all, it seems. And that's because they surround themselves with people who are not interested in learning. Now, isn't that interesting? Isn't that rather sad? But you see, a stem cell is a concept, and it's a concept that's universal, and it's a concept that works whenever, however, through whatever means it chooses. But there is no means for it to choose. Ellen, how does a stem cell work?
According to my thought.
It is done.
Okay, it's done.
The stem cell works, it is done, isn't that right?
Yeah.
The stem cell goes in. It doesn't go by your thought or not thought or whatever. Whatever the stem cell is, that's what it does. It does whatever it does. Now, Sylvia goes into the kitchen to wash the dishes. And on the way into the kitchen, she answers the telephone. And it's her sister who is at the gate. And she wants to come in. And so Sylvia, instead of saying, pressing 9 and saying, come on in, Sylvia drops everything, jumps in the golf cart, zooms down to the gate. It's as though she never was going to do the dishes anyhow. You know what I mean? It's as though she never had that plan at all. When a concept comes into your mind, zoom, you're in it. You do it. And everything else is forgotten. Everything else is forgotten. She didn't realize that before she was going to the kitchen, she was going to go to the bathroom because she had to go, you know. She didn't realize that before she went to the kitchen, she had to put on some clothes, too. And zoom, negative Jaybird. She flies down to the gate and sees her sister and says, oh, it's so wonderful to see you, you know. All is forgotten. Her one-pointedness, not because it's intelligent or unintelligent, it's just because it's one-pointed.
Makes sense.
And she goes zoom into whatever it is that delights her. And we all do that. Now, that's how the stem cell works. The stem cell gets involved, and whoever is the teacher, that is what the teaching is. So that's why we say affirmations. That's why we say, now I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. Now I like me, I'm divine order, I'm peace. Now I like me. We're teaching our brains, the old cells of our brain, which are filled with all sorts of interesting other information, and we're bringing it to it. But we're also playing a game of smoothie, because we're talking to those stem cells that are coming out there. And those stem cells are not born, boing, 10,000 one day, and then it's 24 hours later, boing, another 10,000. Throughout the 24 hours, the stem cells are being born. And throughout the 24 hours, we can be putting into motion our affirmative attitudes, our positive affirmative attitudes for whatever it is that's important. Now, the stem cells are there doing their job. That's part of the creation that you made for your body. You created stem cells in your body to do that work. You created stem cells to become differentiated, become an arm, a leg, an eye, a ear, a nose. Yes, you created that. You created that. Now, take control. Now, when your airplane, you're driving, you're piloting a Cessna, and your airplane stops midair. Stops. Ah! What now? Well, you can either glide in, or you can take your hands off the controls, and the plane will fly itself and just land. If it's level and smooth and so forth, that's nice too. But it'll just go down in a landing mode, because that's how it's designed to do it. It's designed to fly itself. It's designed to land itself. It's designed to be a stable aircraft. And if we let it alone, if we get our bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits that designed the airplane to do that, it will land. Now, hopefully we're not having a building in our way ever trying to land. That's something that they haven't taken care of yet, you know. But you can. Because then you just give a little nudge to the right so you can land on the road or whatever. Or in your brain, you put the cause, this landing is smooth and beautiful. But if you can say this landing is smooth and beautiful, you don't even have to go through the experience of not being able to be in control. But you see, in everything is its natural proclivity to do what its natural proclivity is to do. An airplane's proclivity is to fly and to land and to take off. If a wind comes along, it makes the airplanes take off. The wind gets under the wings and lifts up the airplane, and they're flying with nobody in it, you know. Not too cool, but in many airports, that's why they have tie-downs. Now, you see, our bodies are designed to do the perfect thing, but we give them the wrong information. We say, oh, I got arthritis, I got rheumatism, I got pains, I got this, and sure enough, you got it. The moment some little jerk thought gets in there and says, I'm going to be a hurt thought, I'm arthritis, you say, no way, you don't belong in my house, out, and you just sweep it right out. You say, in my house there is no arthritis, no rheumatism. You don't say that. You say, in my house there's wholeness and perfection. You see? Don't even name the thing that you're kicking out. If you have an uncle who's not a very nice uncle, he drinks and smokes and swears and does bad things in your home, he may be your brother, he may be your uncle, he may be whoever, and you say to him, my friend, though I love you as my relative, I do not want your way of living in my home. Now you go make your own home, do your own thing. I'm not telling you you're good, bad, or indifferent, but not in my house. You know how so many, well, you don't know. You're from a totally different generation. But when I was a kid, the mothers would say to their children, I don't want you to go having sex prematurely. And definitely not in my house. And that was a rule. And it just wasn't done. And mother's house was respected. If you wanted to go in mother's house and have a party, you asked mother. It's your house. But mother is the guardian of it. Mother is the caretaker. Mother is the one who determines. Now, who's mother of your body? The stem cells who are sick, or the stem cells, the cells that are sick are the cells that are whole and perfect. Okay? Then invite them and their friends in. And the more you talk about illness, the more you experience it. The more you talk about health, the more you experience it. What did Hippocrates teach as the father of medicine? He taught health. He taught wholeness. And they never went into the body. That was against the rules. They never went into the body to find out what's going on. But they did the right thing. Interesting, isn't it? Now, the country doctors, they didn't know much about medicine. What did they do? They said, well, keep them warm, keep them in bed, lots of fluid, and they're a healthy body, they'll shake this off. They'll shake it off. And just like last night at the movie of...
Stars in My Crown.
Stars in My Crown, an ancient one. Just at the most crucial part of the movie, Sylvia got up and left, all because she saw the burning cross and the Ku Klux Klan and all of the apparently hateful thing. She didn't hear what happened. The minister got up. He's just an ordinary minister. And he got up and he says, gentlemen, I am giving you this old man to hang if you wish. And he brought him out. But before I do, I'd like to read you his will. And so then he read the will to the people there, the Ku Klux Klan members who were there. And the Ku Klux Klan members were local people who got all fired up by people. And so he reads this will, and he says, "And to Ingeborg, who had gone fishing with me from the time she was a little girl, and who always looked at my fishing rod and just admired it so because it caught so many fish. She always wanted it. I leave you my fishing pole. And to Sylvia, who always loved my dog, I'm going to give you my dog and all the puppies, but make sure that she's never on a chain or a leash, that she doesn't need that. She's a free dog. And to Heinz, who, and even after he was an adult, he would come over into my watermelon patch and steal watermelons, and he'd steal strawberries and other things. He said, I knew that, but to Heinz, I give my watermelon patch and my strawberry patch, everything, all that. And he went right on to maybe about 8 or 10 of the people who were there. And finally, they threw down the rope, and they all walked away because they'd been caught. They'd been caught that this old man had touched their life in a very significant way, and now they were going to kill him just because they wanted his land to put a mine on. And but the crux of the point is yet to come. The minister is reading this to the people, and then they walk away. And he drops the will, and his son is sitting next to him, a little 10-year-old boy maybe, and he reaches down, picks up the will, and he looks at it, turns it this way and that way. There's nothing on it. The blank paper. He says, Dad, there's nothing on here. And he said, oh yes, there is, son. There is his life on there. And, you know, just Shazam, the whole thing works itself out. The whole thing works itself out in perfect divine order because the minister stood up for the principle that he believed in. He stood up for the pure cells of our body, for the pure thoughts of our mind, and for the pure actions of what he believed. He wasn't a Bible-thumping minister in the general sense of the word, but what he was a man who lived the philosophy that he taught. He lived the philosophy that he believed, and he was utterly amazing. So, you see, sometimes we walk out on something just when the salient point comes up. And what that tells us is that we're being touched. We're being touched by what we see, not because of what we see, but because of what we expect. And, of course, I'm glad you left so that what you expected didn't happen, because well, what I expected did happen, that it would all organize itself and come out in perfect order. And you see, this is how it is. This is how it is. Yes, stem cells are wonderful. Stem cells are merely a word. It's merely something that lets us put a handle on something. But actually, it's our thought. And what kind of thoughts do you have in your mind, your heart, your soul, your being? What kind of thoughts do you think about every moment of your life? That's the kind of thing that's fodder for the stem cell. It is going to take its role model from that which you are and that which you share. So, it's kind of a fun thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Have yourself a wonderful day. And know that I love you.
Love you.
I love you.
Love you.
I love you.